Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
And now, to boldly go where no radical Russ has ever gone before.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's show number 909, which means I've never done this before. I have never done a 909th show. This is the first time ever. Everything feels so new. Thanks for being here, everybody. And by everybody, I mean you people on YouTube, because, oh God, am I pissed off. And I'm trying to remain jovial about it. But I've been getting some emails and some comments from people on Facebook and on Twitter. And they've come from time to time, and they're like, when are you going to update your iTunes feed? When are you going to update your iTunes feed? I haven't got your podcast. Why? Are you going to update your iTunes feed? I'm like, yeah. Because I do my show every day from 3 to 5 Pacific. And then right after the show, I burn that file to an MP3. And I upload it to Cannabis Radio, and they take care of publishing it. And when I go to the Cannabis Radio page, the recent shows were up there. So I'm like, they must have got them published. Well, I got one of those comments today from someone. Why aren't you updating your iTunes feed? Hasn't been updated in weeks. I'm like, what? That doesn't make no sense. So I took some time and I logged on to iTunes, which I don't normally do because I'm an Android Spotify guy. I don't do iTunes. But I loaded up iTunes, and I'll be damned if the most recent episode of the show that's uploaded is show number 892. Oh, that's where the audience is. Jeez, 892? That's February 21st. That's 16 episodes. What, 892? Today's 909. Do the math. part of the sell of this show is that it's timely, that it's a daily talk radio program with the daily headlines and the latest news. So, yeah, I can see now why I'm looking at the chat room and looking at the analytics going, geez, where the hell is everybody? Well, yeah. Now I know. So I'm not happy about that. Hopefully the iTunes feed will be cleared up here soon. And it was not just iTunes, by the way. Same for Stitcher. Same for iHeartRadio. So yeah, I'm reading in the chat room. Runaround says, sounds like it's time for a divorce. It might be. I'm not too happy about this. I tell you though, I am building the new platform, and now this has kind of given me more of a kick in the ass to get it done, because on the new platform, I will be in control of the uploads and the posting, and I will guarantee, I'll pull a George Zimmer.
Yeah, I like the way you look. I guarantee it.
Right? I'll do a George Zimmer here.
I guarantee that my podcast will be up at 6 p.m. Pacific every night.
Sorry, George. Just teasing. It was. I mean, before 2015, I'll just put it that way, I handled all my podcast posting. And people got used to the fact that, yeah, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern time, boom, that podcast was there every damn day, at least every day that I did a podcast. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, folks, after these 909 shows, I think it's finally sunk into my old thick skull. The magical 10 words. The magical 10 two-letter words. If it is to be, it is up to me. And so that's the way it's going to be, folks. As we move forward towards show 1000, I'm going to go back to being just the Russ Belville Show. Just going to be independent. Going to be all on me. I'm not going to rely on any networks anymore, any sponsors, any funders, any of that. There's one thing I can count on. It's that I'll be here every day posting this show and that you'll be here every day listening to it and supporting it. And we'll grow up from there. And y'all will be the core moderators, the core members, the core VIPs. I'm very likely to, I'm not going to say that, but everybody who's a VIP right now is going to be automatically entered into the VIP system for the new platform. Thank you, everybody. That's enough of me complaining. When we come back, the origins of marijuana prohibition are so racist that merely mentioning them can get you kicked out of the Kentucky State House. It's a hell of a story, and it involves a state lawmaker's son. Be right back.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is the store she got fired from. This is the house she broke into. This is where she started selling her body. This is the daughter she gave birth to 2 months early. And this is what I said when she told me she was going to try meth.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer.
Herb Age Designs.
Lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly.
Herb Age Designs.
We've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear.
Herb Age Designs.
We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at
HerbAgeDesigns.com.
And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question for medicinal purposes, for medical purposes. Absolutely, it's fine.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Checking up on the chat room, and we're discussing the core comment that I made, that maybe our chat room, our regulars, will be called the Cannabis Core. Doc Herbalist says it should be the United Cannabis Core. John Thomas mentions the Civilian Conservation Corps. Maybe we could be the Cannabis Conservation Corps, the CCC. We could bring back the CCC. We're the Cannabis Conservation Corps. Well, it works for me. I like it. So I have this story to tell you. Oh, my God. What a story. All right. So coming out of Frankfort, Kentucky, and it involves the Speaker of the House of Kentucky permanently banning 86ing the son of a state senator from the Capitol Annex. The state senator's name, Dan Seam Sr., and his son, Dan Seam Jr., has been banned from the Capitol Annex. And the reason why is an investigation by the legislative staff found that Dan Seam Jr. had made racially charged remarks at the offices last month. It's the state house offices, right? You walk around and lobbying. Well, here's the deal. The younger Dan Seam Jr. is the director of Kentuckians for Medical Marijuana. He's a medical marijuana advocate. His father, Dan Seam Sr., the state senator, is a Louisville Republican who's been in the state house since 1982. He guys, the Robert Byrd of the Kentucky Senate, right? And his son has been permanently banned, lifetime ban for his son for making racially charged remarks. Now, that's some pretty serious stuff, right? You know, what's this guy doing? What, going to the state house and calling people racial epithets and stuff? I mean, did he show up somewhere in blackface? What'd the guy do, right? Okay, well, here's what happened. Here's what happened. This happened back in February, February 17th. He was waiting to see a state representative about marijuana legislation. He's going to just doing his gig, lobbying, advocating for medical marijuana. Now, according to a letter that was sent by the director of the Legislative Research Commission, this is the charge, basically, why he's banned permanently. It says that while he was in the lobby, he proceeded to engage in a racially charged monologue. Some of the offensive statements attributed to you include commenting that whites were afraid of the coloreds, that whites were afraid that coloreds would have sex with white women, referring to African Americans and Latinos as coloreds, and stating that white people were scared of Negroes. Now, according to the investigator, an African-American employee of the legislature was, quote, within a few feet of you and was so offended that she left her workstation in distress. He also reports a second legislative staffer was also offended. The staff investigation substantiated the claims that he had made the offensive remarks. The report then was sent to the Speaker of the House, who has directed me to inform you that you are banned from the third floor of the Capitol Annex. This ban is unequivocal and permanent, end quote. Okay, so why in the hell is the son of a longtime Kentucky Republican state senator up in the third floor of the Capitol talking about the coloreds wanting to have sex with the white women and the coloreds? and what was the other one? That the sex with white women and white people were scared of Negroes. How could that come about? Well, here's why. Here's why. He was there to visit the reps, talk about this marijuana thing, this marijuana bill, and he was quoting Harry J. Anslinger, the head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics from the 1930s. Dan Seam Jr. says, quote, I was showing them how appalling this quotation was and how I'm fighting the unfair marijuana arrest for the African-American community. Kentuckians for Medical Marijuana frequently cite the quotation, but the offended staffers must not have understood the context. Quote, I feel really bad. It's embarrassing. I've been going up there for 30 years and I try to have respect, end quote. He's also complaining there's been no due process on this. He goes on to add, let's see, find the quote. Here we go. I'm an advocate for the African American. I've been advocating because of the disparaging numbers of African American arrests in marijuana, end quote. This was in a phone interview to the Kentucky Louisville Courier Journal newspaper. So, okay. I feel badly that the two staffers heard these comments and were offended. And it's understandable that outside of context, if you didn't know that we were quoting Harry J. Anslinger in this case, that yes, it would be offensive and shocking. And I can understand that a person probably shouldn't do that out in the lobby where you're not exactly sure who can be hearing you or knowing what context you're speaking in. However, let's do a little perspective here. Let's have a little perspective. This is a guy who's not just some run-of-the-mill dude who just came in and started saying coloreds and Negroes. He's a long-time lobbyist and knows his way around the Capitol. His dad's been there since 82. Okay, so he's not just some schmuck off the street, okay? Second of all, any sort of investigation in this, if you heard his side of it, you'd understand he wasn't speaking with his own voice. He was quoting someone, and there was a legislative and lobbying purpose to that quote. At this point, I would start threatening First Amendment action on this legislature. I would start threatening that you are threatening to curtail my right to petition my government for a redress of grievances. You're infringing on my First Amendment rights here. I'd start threatening that because I do believe that it would have been appropriate to censure him, right? To issue him a warning letter, some sort of derogatory letter saying, you said something bad, it was bad, it offended people, don't ever say it again. But you can't, on a first offense like this, kick the guy out of the state house for life? No. This deserves a letter. This deserves some sort of probationary period. You can't come in for 30 days. We would like you to write a letter of apology to the people, whatever. But man, you're blowing this way out of proportion, Speaker of the House of Kentucky. Way out of proportion. And I would also threaten the fact that what we're talking about here is someone who's lobbying for something that's politically controversial in Kentucky. Somebody who's got the bona fides of being the son of a longtime Republican who maybe could start swaying some votes there in favor of medical marijuana in Kentucky. Shutting this guy out of the legislature is an even bigger deal than shutting out just any old lobbyist or any old member of the public. This reeks of political opportunism. This reeks of a Speaker of the House who sees an opportunity. Aha! Now I got that guy. I can kick that sucker out for the rest of his life. So I will keep my eyes on this story because this deserves a follow-up. The reporter, or the Speaker of the House, who's also Republican, told reporters later Wednesday that Bierman informed him of the complaint and letter, later reported the findings of the investigation. It was his finding that the allegations were substantiated, and it was his recommendation to me as speaker that this person be barred from the third floor, and I accepted his recommendation. That's the long and the short of it, end quote. So the speaker here is passing the buck, throwing the investigator under the bus on this one, that it's the investigator who's got the problem, the investigator that wants him banned permanently. Don't know much about this David Bierman, the director of Legislative Research Commission. But why he would want to react so strongly in banning this guy for life just seems a little suspect to me. And again, the words he were saying, right? He didn't even drop the big N-bomb. It was coloreds and Negroes, he said. If anything, the offense is partially like, you know, what are you, from 1950, 1930? Which it was. It was from the 1930s. Racists don't talk like that anymore unless they're 80, 90 years old. This guy's like the son of a legislator. He's got to be in his 30s, 40s, or 50s, right? This is just, it's one of those cases also, because this touches on another area that I think about a lot, and it's just this offense culture and this political correctness run amok. I understand we don't want to have a hostile workplace. And that's the angle the employees are going for. And I agree. They should not be subjected to people spewing inflammatory, racially charged rhetoric, even if it is quoting Harry J. Anslinger. But it's a first offense. And it's the first time this has happened. And your outrage shouldn't mean someone loses their First Amendment rights for the rest of their life. That's a little over the top there. We'll keep our eye on Kentucky and the rest of that story. We'll update it as we get more information on it. Strange.
Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Can you believe that guy is a senator now? Hey folks, it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing as we do this time of day. Me and the Packers pipe are all ready. I hope you are too. We'll be back with some news on Sir Patrick Stewart. Oh, Captain, my Captain, when we return.
Get your tickets now for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference happening one day only in Eugene, Oregon on Friday, April 28th. This year's OMBC will prepare you for the world of adult use and medical marijuana business opportunities in Oregon. You'll learn all about the latest OLCC regulations for adult use cannabis, including testing requirements, tech and branding, taxes and distribution, and the latest developments in medical marijuana regulations. OMBC features networking with Oregon's leading experts in marijuana, including State Senator Floyd Prezansky. You'll also get to hear from four-time NBA champion and now cannabis entrepreneur, John Sally. Early bird pricing is available for conference only and VIP passes, which get you access to the VIP networking events featuring John Sally and other speakers. It's the 2017 Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Tickets available now at OregonMBC.com. That's OregonMBC.com before April 14th to get your early bird pricing. OregonMBC.com.
The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges.
Hey, Mo!
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Oh, gnarly!
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Yar, thar be pirates here. Har, 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 har.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show. The voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, and what are the chances that we get two marijuana racism stories in the same day? Okay, they'd be pretty good, actually. But we got another one. We were just talking about Kentucky banning the medical marijuana advocate because he quoted Harry J. Anslinger. If only they would have banned Harry J. Anslinger when he was quoting Harry J. Anslinger, we wouldn't be in this mess, right? So we move from Kentucky now to Alabama, and I just want to read the story because there's not much on it, so I'll just read the whole story. But again, racial comments involved in marijuana debates. So here we go from AL.com and the Associated Press. A routine Alabama committee meeting broke down Wednesday after lawmakers leveled an accusation of racism at a speaker who dismissed marijuana arrest disparities as playing the race card. Representative Wanda Lynn Given, a Birmingham Democrat, warned former state representative Richard Laird to never return to the House Judiciary Committee for using the term race card during a public hearing about legislation that would lessen penalties for marijuana possession in the state. She also argued with the body's chairman, Andalusia Republican Representative Mike Jones, for interrupting her during the spat and criticized him for not stopping Laird when he made the comment. Laird apologized shortly after saying, quote, I hate when anyone plays the race card, end quote, in reference to a proponent of the bill who previously noted that African Americans were more likely to be arrested for possessing the drug. When the hearing ended, Given hurled an expletive-laden rant at Jones. She then approached Laird and pointed her finger in his face, telling him that she would remove him if he ever came back. Quote, "Don't you ever come in here again. I will take you out, end quote, she told Laird before leaving the room. Laird was representing the ethics group Alabama Citizens Action Program during the hearing. Security escorted him out after the meeting ended. Emailed requests for comments to Given and Jones were not immediately returned. A voicemail left on Laird's phone was also not immediately returned. So, the first thing here that I got to comment on is this, got to get the names right. Who's who again? Richard Laird. This representative Richard Laird, he's representing this Alabama Citizens Action Program in a hearing about this decrim bill going through Alabama, right? And someone gets up on the testimony and says, a plain fact. It's just a plain fact that African Americans are disproportionately busted for marijuana in the state of Alabama than white folks. That's not playing the race card. Like, some people just have this problem with acknowledging that race matters in this country. That's not to say it should. In fact, we're working toward a more perfect union in this country, right? That's the whole idea, a more perfect union for our domestic solidarity and tranquility and et cetera. But we have to, before we can get to that place, we have to acknowledge that it exists and that it matters and that there is something to the point that if you're arguing for decriminalization, the people that this could benefit the most are the people being disproportionately affected by it. But some people don't want to hear that truth. And they say, you're playing the race card. You're playing the race card. You're a race baiter. You're ginning up racial animosity. I ain't ginning up nothing. The racial animosity has been there for 400 years. It's just nowadays, white folks are starting to notice it. It's like, as our numbers dwindle in comparison to everybody else, and boy, don't get me started on Representative Steve King and Geert what's his hell in the Netherlands and so forth. But as our numbers dwindle, folks are getting scared. Oh my God, I'm getting scared. Not everybody looks like me anymore. Oh no. So they get frightened and frustrated, and they throw out this term, the race card. You're playing the race card. God forbid that after everything that African Americans and Latinos and Native Americans have been through, God forbid that they get some special privilege called a race card. Oh, no. They got something. You get to play the race card. That's the least we could do. That's not even 40 acres and a mule, is it? Come on. So, yeah, this is something. Now, how the Rep Wanda Lynn Given responded, don't ever come in here, I will take you out, and Phil Flarn, Phil, fuck you kind of stuff. I don't know that she said fuck you, but she an expletive-laden rant, we know. That's not the way to respond to it. That doesn't help busting any stereotypes, really. It's not doing that. Glad she responded and glad she got angry about it, absolutely. And shame on the representative that was leading the committee for not calling him out on it on the first place. But to give him some benefit of the doubt, it's not something sometimes a lot of folks are. And again, the guy's name is what? Mike Jones? Republican Representative Mike Jones. Can't guarantee he's white, but I'm willing to bet on it. A lot of white folks aren't cognizant of this. They don't recognize that some of the things we say are just like racist as fuck. Like playing the race card, saying that it's kind of racist as fuck. All lives matter. That's racist as fuck, right? A lot of us don't know that, but we're learning. At least some of us are. Anyway, let me get out of this discussion and into something a little lighter and cheerier and a little less controversial. I am a huge, huge Star Trek fan. Like, you're either a Star Wars nerd or a Star Trek nerd. I was the Star Trek nerd as a kid. Not to say I don't like Star Wars, but Star Trek is obviously superior, right? So, anyway, and when it comes to Star Trek, by the way, I'm an old school Star Trek fan. I'm an original series Star Trek fan, right? I go back to the day. Now, not all the way, like Star Trek, its last season ended, like I was like 4 months old or so. But as a kid in the 70s growing up, watching TV, it was on reruns all the time. So I was like, just flooded my brain with Star Trek. I was big into Spock, believe it or not. Not Captain Kirk. I was more of a Spock guy, like Mr. Spock. So anyway, I'm an old school Star Trek guy. I always liked the old school Trek because it reminded me of like in high school drama when you did these Greek plays and your sets were very sparse. Like you didn't have real sets. It was just like a wireframe cage or this. And it was all meant to focus on the actors and the script, not the scenery kind of thing. Star Trek, old Star Trek's like that to me, right? Because you look back at it now and the sets are just laughable. The computers are laughable. Although, gotta admit, a lot of stuff they thought of in Star Trek from the 60s is stuff we have now. We got Captain Kirk's communicator. We got Dr. McCoy's medical bed, right? We got a lot of the cool stuff. We just don't have that transporter yet. Damn it. Oh, if we could just have the transporter, that's what we need. Anyway, I digress. There's a story up in the Daily Mail out in the UK. Sir Patrick Stewart reveals he uses marijuana every day to help deal with his debilitating arthritis symptoms. So he's 76 years old, and he was admitting this because now Oxford University, the oldest university on the planet, I think it was formed in, 1200 something? Anyway, I think Oxford, I think the stat I saw the other day was Oxford University. When Oxford University was formed, there were still woolly mammoths or something like that. Anyway, internet stuff. So he's 76. He's helping to promote that Oxford University is started this research initiative for medical cannabis. And so he put out a statement saying, I use medical cannabis daily. He uses an ointment, spray, and edible marijuana medicine to help him with his condition. And this is what he wrote, quote, 2 years ago in Los Angeles, I was examined by a doctor and given a note which gave me legal permission to purchase from a registered outlet cannabis-based products, which I was advised might help the orthoarthritis in both my hands. This, it would seem, is a genetically based condition. My mother had badly distorted and painful hands. I purchased an ointment, spray, and edibles. The ointment, while providing some relief from the discomfort, was too greasy to use during daytime, and so I only use it at night. It helps with sleep, as the pain was reduced. The spray, however, is much more usable, and I spray my fingers, and particularly my thumb joints, several times a day. The spray very quickly evaporates and leaves my hands quite dry, though with a slight burning or tingling sensation, which is not unpleasant. I believe that the ointment and spray have significantly reduced the stiffness and pain in my hands. I can make fists, which was not the case before I began this treatment. I have had no negative side effects from this treatment, and the alternative would have been to continue taking NSAIDs, Advil, Aleve, and Naproxen, which are known to be harsh on the liver and to cause acid reflux. This is an important step forward for Britain in a field of research that has for too long been held back by prejudice, fear, and ignorance. I believe this program of research might result in benefits for people like myself, as well as millions of others. Thank you so much, Sir Patrick Stewart, for speaking out on this issue that is so wonderful. And we appreciate all that he's doing here to try to raise the awareness of this issue in Britain and throughout the world. I'm telling you, the way to get marijuana legalized, wherever you're at, is to get your grandma a salve. I'm telling you, get grandma some medicated lotion, some spray like Sir Patrick Stewart's using. Get him that stuff, and I have seen nothing change minds faster than that. And I've seen a lot of people's first experience with marijuana in my career here, kind of what I'm, you know, when I go from city to city and state to state, I get to experience a lot of people who are new to this world and who it's their first experience. And I'm telling you, those sprays and tinctures, you put some on grandma's hands and she can knit again. She can crochet again. She can type or write again. That is going to enormously change her worldview on what cannabis is and what it can mean. there's this unfortunate demonization of the smoking of marijuana. It just is. That's just the reality. And it is a bit of a tightrope to walk here when we talk about this salve, spray, tincture, edible stuff, and vaporization to bring new people on board for the fear that they'll keep themselves separate from those of us who smoke it, maybe continue punishing those of us who smoke it. It's a risk we got to take. I believe the more older folks we get on board is worth far more than the younger folks that are already on board. Get your grandma some salve. All right, when we come back, we've got more stories here for you, some more data on how many beer drinkers would switch to pot if it were legal. And what do you think Anheuser-Busch thinks about that when we return?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I smell pot coming from over here and grilled onions from over there. Two of my favorite smells ever. Both those onions and that pot smell really good up here, you know.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you. Say that.
Hey, this is great, man.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. And it's just about 38 after the hour. And when we left, we were asking the question, how many U.S. beer drinkers would switch to marijuana if it were legal? Interesting question, huh? Well, the story is up on Quartz.com. That's QZ.com. And it turns out they say the number is a quarter. 1/4 of U.S. cannabis consumers would switch, of beer drinkers, I'm sorry, would switch. According to this new poll from the Cannabis Consumer Group, 27% of 40,000 people surveyed last year said that cannabis already does replace beer in their lives, or could if the former were legalized. If booze was legal, they'd be if cannabis was legal, they'd be dropping the booze. Now, of course, this is something that's of concern. Brewers, who in 2015 sold more than $105 billion worth of beer. Let's reiterate, cannabis industry, $7 billion total. Beer, $105 billion. So the brewers stand to lose in this trade-off. They say about $2 billion annually, noting also that wine and spirits sales will be affected as well. Ultimately, the analysts project cannabis will cost beer 7% of its market. Ooh. So you remember people talking about, oh, well, of course marijuana is going to be okay. It makes so much money. It generates so many jobs. Right. But if your job is a beer truck driver or a winery or a distillery, it might be costing you jobs. It might be costing you money. There could be big reason to put money against legalization of marijuana. Something we certainly have seen in the past. So the other thing they have on this, which is kind of fascinating, is this evidence they have to support the idea that this is already happening. Cowan and Company noted that cannabis consumption seems to be leading to lower beer sales in Oregon, Colorado, and Washington, the three states where weed is recreationally legal. What? Recreational is such a stupid word. We're legal for adult use. Recreationally legal. All right. The shift in consumption habits was apparently most dramatic in Denver, where people bought 6% less beer post-legalization. Analysts said, too, that high-income consumers and men in general have been drinking less alcohol in the past 5 years, while weed use rose among those groups. So, the CTG report says that, quote, legal cannabis penetration will settle at a level comparable to that of beer and wine, and that a fully mature market would create a new $50 billion industry. So there you go, folks. That's the word on alcohol and marijuana. About one out of four beer drinkers would switch if they could. Because they know marijuana is safer than alcohol. You won't have that hangover. The only thing stopping people from switching to weed en masse is the illegality of it and the workplace drug test. Take those two things away, and we will see the true level of cannabis consumption. And that's one thing, you know, it's going to be a weird thing to work through, because if all goes right, marijuana use should increase. The people that are poisoning themselves with alcohol, them switching over, will increase the number of marijuana smokers. And that's a good thing from a harm reduction standpoint. But it's going to be hard to convince show the public that. Kind of hard to educate the public that, now don't freak out, the more people are smoking pot, that's a good thing. We're going to have to find a way to get that message through. Now, we were also talking earlier about Jean-Luc Picard. It's funny how the younger generation knows him as Professor X from the X-Men, Charles Xavier, right? Like, that's their iconic understanding of who Patrick Stewart is. But anyway, Sir Patrick Stewart was, of course, Captain Jean-Luc Picard on the Next Generation version of Star Trek, which I did kind of welcome because, A, it was a bald guy, cool. Two, French guy named Belville, not so bad. I'm Belville Picard, that kind of works. I'm digging it. But of course, my all-time favorite, Captain James Tiberius Kirk, and the man who portrayed him, William Shatner, can't beat him. I thought now, in honor of our little chat room, we were just talking on the chat room about, they said, that when I said what Sir Patrick Stewart said about medical marijuana, the chat room was saying, you'd never hear James Tiberius Kirk say that. Say, yeah, because Captain Kirk would say, I have tried this medical marijuana salve, and it is magical, right? You get that Shatner delivery. So in honor of that, I wanted to play you my favorite ever Captain Kirk line from the original Star Trek series.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning out of the words, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. To ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish the Constitution.
That's my favorite. There we go, Captain Kirk. All right, love it. And yes, give the Kirk clap. Yes. One of my favorite things ever. So one more story before we close up shop. This one's important, folks, because, you know, we got Attorney General Sessions out there. We got Sessions talking about the Cole memo.
The Cole memorandum set up some policies under President Obama's Department of Justice about how cases should be selected in those states and what would be appropriate for federal prosecution, much of which I think is valid. I may have some different ideas myself in addition to that.
And?
So within those states, we're going to develop plans that have a good sound basis to it, and we're not going to stop prosecuting marijuana in those states.
So let's get down to the heart of this, because in the Cole memo, and by the way, if you want to follow along at home, you can use the RadRust short link to the Cole memo. It's rad-r.us/Cole memo. Capitalize the C, capitalize the M. So the two words are capitalized. rad-r.us/Cole memo. And you can read the actual memo. In the memo, it lists 8 priorities that determine whether or not the federal government ought to go busting organizations in the legal states. And priority, I believe it's number 2, could be number 1, but it's in the top 3 of the priorities, is that legal marijuana is not used as a cover for drug trafficking organizations, for crime, for them to be able to commit other drug crimes and trafficking, etc. And one of the priorities is that there's no diversion of state legal marijuana from these organizations outside of the state. That's pretty clear. They're the, like, keep it in your state border and don't let criminals use it, and we will stay out of your state. So, with that perspective and background, this just in from CBS Denver and the Associated Press, Colorado organization accused of exporting pot. Authorities are raiding over a dozen locations in Colorado linked with an organization accused of shipping marijuana out of state. The Drug Enforcement Administration says it's helping local police and prosecutors serve search warrants at 20 locations between the Denver and Colorado Springs areas on Thursday. A DEA spokesman says the investigation into the organization has been in the works for months and isn't the result of any new directive from the Trump administration. There were several rounds of pot raids in the state under the previous administration. New Attorney General Jeff Sessions has indicated he wants stronger enforcement of federal law on marijuana. Now, that's the first report I've gotten here. It's CBS Denver, and I'm still paying attention to the news feeds here, trying to find if there's any other reports on this. So far, nothing, but like I say, folks, it's not whether or not Jeff Sessions wants to go after weed. He does. He doesn't like us. He's a bigot. He's a bigot through and through in many ways, not the least of which is cannabis. But it's not a question of whether he wants to. It's a question of whether he will. And he signaled that he believes in this Cole memo, and the Cole memo gives him the guidance as to whether he should go do it. And he said that we're going to continue enforcing federal laws, and if all he needs are cases that show the Cole memo is being violated, folks, there's a case every week. You don't even hear all the stories that come across my desk as I'm researching day by day to come up with the headline news. So many of these busts, this car was stopped with 20 pounds, this car was stopped with 15 pounds, this car was stopped with 80 pounds, coming across Nebraska or Kansas or any place Midwest as weed from the West is making its way east to make more money. Comes across my desk every week, and I just don't report them because it's kind of boring. It's not really news that cops are busting people for weed. But in the aggregate, when you look at it, it's just coal violation after coal violation that I see coming across my desk every day. And when the coal memo came out, I was kind of like worried about it a little. I was like, well, geez, this kind of is like a list of why you could bust people, right? Because there's no way a legal marijuana state can fulfill all 8 tenets of the Cole memo. There's just no way that there'll be no out-of-state diversion. Are you serious? Out-of-state diversion happens every day when people from Vancouver, Washington come to Portland to buy weed. It happened before when we didn't have legal weed. We'd go to Vancouver to buy it and bring it back to Portland. Happens every day. Happens every day from Idaho to Oregon. Happens every day from Kansas to Colorado, Colorado to Kansas. Happens every day. Keep it out of the hands of minors, like no minor has ever gotten their hands on a legal marijuana product. Happens every day. There's no way a state can fulfill all eight tenets of the Cole memo. So it's only just been a matter of the Obama administration looking the other way. Yeah, everything's fine. We're not. We got other things to worry about. So now it's just a matter, are they going to keep looking the other way? Or are they going to look and go, oh my God, look, all these violations of the Cole memo. And we said we'd follow the Cole memo. And the people won't get upset about us because they agreed with the Cole memo. And the Cole memo said, don't let the kids get it. Don't let it go out of state. Look, kids got it and went out of state. What do you expect us to do? We got to do it. I'm not alone on this. Recent post by Jacob Sullum just came up today on Reason.com. Jeff Sessions' praise for the Cole marijuana memo is not a promise of restraint. The memo leaves plenty of room for a crackdown on the newly legal cannabis industry. We'll follow up on that in our closing segment. Plus, I look forward to tomorrow's show. Thanks, everybody, for sticking around. Onward to show 1000. I'm Radical Russ. We're back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Right now, marijuana is listed by the federal government as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Far out, man. I haven't seen a bong in years.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. Dike. Just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. As we close up shop, I got to address this comment in the chat room. It's this notion that the worst thing that could happen is Sessions would crack down on the legal marijuana industry, and we'd be left with what they have in Washington, D.C., the grow-and-give model, where people are free to grow their own, they're free to possess it and smoke it, and they're free to give it to each other. Here's the problem with that. The grow-and-give model is the model we've always had. The grow-and-give model is the unregulated black market, the underground market, pardon me, the illicit market. Nobody is fooled into thinking that nobody is exchanging money for marijuana in Washington, D.C. It's the same problems that we always have with marijuana when it comes to the underground, unregulated market from a consumer perspective. Untested, tainted products, unsure weights and measures, sketchy people sometimes that we have to get it from, at the mercy of what they choose to grow and what they particularly have, and all of that economic activity not generating tax revenue and not generating any help for the rest of the community. It leaves us at the mercy of the growers. It leaves us at the mercy of the dealers. We don't have our choice like we have normally in states that have legal places to shop. It's all the worst parts of the underground illicit market without the possibility of being arrested by the cops. That is nice. I'm not going to short that. That's great. You can't get arrested for possession. But most people that get arrested for possession were getting fines, tickets, probation, loss of their driver's license and such. It's the people that get busted for the illegal sales and the possession with intent to sell that are getting the jail time. And that is going to increase in a situation where you turn over states that have built a market based on shopping in stores and then turn that all back over to the unregulated market. That's just going to be a heyday for the rural prosecutors and the pot-hating prosecutors who want to go after what does still remain illegal in the legal marijuana states, the unlicensed sale of marijuana. So while it may be not as bad as going back to full-scale prohibition, it's not what I would like to characterize as a best-case scenario. Best-case scenario is we get Donald Trump and Mike Pence impeached, all of these hooligans out of their offices, and the idea of cracking down on marijuana goes to the scrap bin of history. That's my best-case scenario. All right, so I wanted to get to another opinion on this, which is one that I revere greatly, somebody I have a lot of respect for in the cannabis sphere, and that's Jacob Sullum, writing out at Reason.com. This is how he puts it in three paragraphs he's written recently. The Huffington Post portrays Sessions' comments as reassuring. Under the headline, Jeff Sessions suggests a crackdown isn't coming for legal weed, reporter Matt Ferner says, quote, Attorney General Jeff Sessions hates marijuana, but it appears unlikely that he'll send the federal government to war against states that have legalized it, end quote. Yet what Sessions said yesterday is essentially the same as what he said at his confirmation hearing in January, where he described some of Cole's criteria as truly valuable in evaluating cases. He tellingly added that, quote, the criticism I think that was legitimate is that they may not have been followed, end quote. The Justice Department's failure to properly implement the Cole memo was the theme of the April 2016 Senate hearing at which Sessions said, quote, the Department of Justice needs to be clear that marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized, end quote. The title of the hearing, which was held by the Senate Caucus on International Narcotics Control, asked, quote, is the Department of Justice adequately protecting the public from the impact of state recreational marijuana legalization, end quote. Sessions clearly did not think it was. Cole listed eight enforcement priorities, including prevention of interstate smuggling, distribution to minors, and, quote, adverse public health consequences related to marijuana use, end quote. Any one of them could easily be cited as a rationale for seriously disrupting the newly legal cannabis industry, if not shutting it down entirely. U.S. attorneys could wreak havoc simply by sending threatening letters to state-licensed cannabis businesses, their landlords, or anyone else who facilitates their federal felonies. The Department of Justice also could challenge state licensing systems in federal court, arguing that giving an official stamp of approval to marijuana suppliers violates the Controlled Substances Act. Nothing Sessions has said precludes any of that. It all comes down to his interpretation of the Cole memo, which made no promises and left federal prosecutors lots of leeway to target state legal marijuana businesses. Thank you, Jacob Sullum. Thank you very much. So, worst case scenario. Sorry, John, I misspoke. I caught that when I said it, too. My bad. I didn't mean to say best case scenario. I meant to say worst case scenario. You're right. I blew that as I was saying it. Still, I'd much rather have what we've got here in Oregon, places to shop, than the worst case scenario of grow and give where I have to go back and find a dealer again. Don't want to do that. All right, folks, that's all the time we got for today's show. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and views you can use for the cannabis community. And I will be here tomorrow. I thought I'd be flying to Philadelphia and making my way to Atlantic City, but I'm not. That gig got canceled, so I'll be here. Hope to see you now. Then. Tomorrow. Oh, for everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.